Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am joined by my colleague at Sportsnet, someone that I just, I love his work, Jacob Staller of Sportsnet, of course. Thanks so much, Jacob, for taking the time and doing this. It's nice to see your face and have you on the show. How are things?
Things are good. I'm sure you're glad to not be hearing from me about tech support because you're my kind of go-to for any behind the scenes issues whenever we're setting up work stuff. So yeah, it's good. I'm glad to talk in a non-geek squad way.
I've never been called been called IT support ever in my life, so I'll take that with a badge. I'll take the
Your
badge.
logistics support. That's a better way to
Exactly,
put it.
exactly. I'm just like the fixer upper. I don't know, Mr. Clean. How are, I guess before we get started, and obviously you've been covering the Jets, but maybe talk about a little bit about your career journey and like what I guess for you drew you to sports journalism.
When we talked about us doing this, I kind of was thinking back to it, and like I don't really have an exact moment, but like growing up, I was super into like hockey. I wasn't very good, but I was really big on like watching hockey, and I played at the lowest possible level with my buddies, and I was a huge Manitoba Moose 1.0 fan, and like the biggest. So it's funny, Scott Arneil, the Jets coach, was one of the coaches back then. There's a litany of names that are still around the Jets organization. Wade Flaherty, the goaltender coach, was a goalie there at one point. It's like my first taste of real fandom were the days of, or Jimmy Roy, who was the director of player development. So Mike Keane, like that was my first kind of introduction to that fandom. And when I was thinking about the start, this is a funny thing, is when I was young, there was an inside joke with my uncle and my dad how at like or after or during every game, if we mentioned a player, so let's say Jason Jaffrey, or I'd ask my uncle, like, does he wear a mouth guard? Does he wear a visor? I'd do it for every single player. My uncle's like, I don't know, like that's so like obscure. And like I would always pay attention to those things. So maybe that was the start, which we still say all the time. But maybe that was the start to me digging a bit below the surface of the average fan. So I was really big on the Moose, and then when the Moose came, sorry, when during that time, like my dad and his brother would always kind of say, like, let's see, who's your favorite NHL team? They'd say the Jets. I'm like, they're not here. Like, I get so frustrated, but like there wasn't that really love for it. Like we kind of followed Montreal because my dad's other brother lives there. I would keep tabs with Vancouver because they were the affiliate for the Moose, but I was all in on AHL. Like I loved the Moose. And when I would say the start to sports journalism, sort of, so kind of coincides with the Jets coming back, kind of not. So when the Jets came back, my love for hockey just was like, it was euphoric. It was the best thing ever. Like it was unreal. Like I just remember the anticipation of it and like that moment. So that was awesome. And then so Jets come back, diehard Jets fan. Like I'm the biggest fan you could think of. The Jets came back at the end of grade six for me. So let's say grade seven, eight, I'm like diehard Jets. Or the dates are wrong. But anyways, in grade eight, what happened was I started this Twitter account. It was my current Twitter account, but the original name was Official Jet Fuel. I think it was The Official Jet Fuel or something.
Good
And yeah, right. Like, not to be confused with the Unofficial Jet Fuel.
one.
And so, like, it's weird because, like, sport, like, I guess in our, like, you and I's era, like, that's, like, a part of sports journalism. But at the time, I don't know if I even thought I wanted to be a reporter or anything. I don't even know if I don't even know if I knew what I wanted to do or if this correlated. I just loved the Jets. Like I'd like watch every single game. Like I'm sure that's not even that crazy, but just I was wired. Like even if I went to a Jets game, I got to go to a couple of games per year. Just even an away game, like the anticipation all day, I get so psyched up for it. So grade eight, I saw this Twitter account, and I started doing like live updates of like games, I guess. Like I don't even know if it was like it feels so long ago. Like I can't even remember.
That's okay.
And And then I think so then what happened was around grade nine, I was always good at English and like creative writing stuff. And I remember talking to my dad about how I want to do something like this. And he was like, okay, like that doesn't really, like, what does that mean? Like, so I remember maybe the first idea on pen and paper was the Jet Journal or something like that, or Jet Fuel. I was trying to play off that. And I wrote it and so it's cool. Yeah, this is great. Good, like, go for it. Like, but I didn't really know what to do. Like, I didn't know what that meant or how to go from being myself to, like, Gary Lawless was the big presence. That, like, how do I become Gary Lawless? I had no idea. So I reached out to a blog named Winnipeg Whiteout, and I asked them if I could write for them. And I think they just said yes. I don't know. I must have written something decent. So I would write blogs for them, and then I got from there. I went to Arctic Ice Hockey, which was SB Nation's Jet site. I know I'm rambling here, hard. We'll get into each part, but we got into the SB Nation, and that was around grade 9 or 10. At that point, or grade 10, I'm like, this is what I want to do. Like, no question, absolutely. So, I still wasn't the best writer, I don't think. I was a good writer, but it took me a while to get the fine tune sort of things. But I was always really good at sort of, I don't want to say analyzing, but I was really good at reading and keeping up with things. So I was always very detail oriented. So grade 10, I'm doing that. Then grade 11, I started writing for Jets Nation as well, the Nation Network. They're still around, I believe. Well, the Nation Network now is, Daily Faceoff, and that's a huge mecca. But this is before then. So, and then at the time, Thomas Drance was a managing editor, and then
Answer.
I was there writing for a couple months. Yeah, Drance was there, and then Garrett Hole, who's still pretty active in Jets Twitter, after a couple of months, was like, I'm leaving. Do you want to become a managing editor? And I was like, what? I'm in grade 12 biology. Like, what do you mean? Like, man, like what? I'm writing in class. Like, what if someone takes away my laptop for writing the wrong thing in school? Like, the site goes down. And I don't know, just kind of worked out that way that, I was able to do it. I got some support, whatever. And then that leads into my big break being when I moved to Toronto for journalism school. At that point, Ryerson, which was throughout those years I mentioned, like my dream of what I want to do. I was able to parlay the Nation Network connections into becoming the Marlies beat writer. And that's kind of where I learned the real craft of being a reporter. And I think things kind of got crazy. Is that the longest answer you've ever had, Alex? Is that
No. I probably
no?
was given like a spiel about my going to the World Juniors at 10 years old and stuff. So don't worry, you didn't go off
All
like
right.
too much. But I guess with that, like when you got yourself to the Marlies and obviously like covering that team, like did you feel like you knew what you were doing? Like how much was it like learning on the fly and did you?
I missed the part. You just reminded me.
There
Okay.
you go.
In grade 12 of there, I started for Jets Nation doing some Manitoba Moose stuff. So that was my first bit. So I had a little bit of an introduction there going into the press box. But sorry, that was a huge thing. But your question was about, did I feel like I knew what I was doing? God, no. Like, I did and I didn't. Like, I think I was so lucky to have, and I say this to a lot of people, the odd time, I'm sure you're the same way, Alex, like you and I, we're not far removed. And even today, you and I both are reaching out to people asking for advice.
All the
Like,
time.
our colleagues at Sportsnet are the best. Like, I've never been on a better team in that aspect. But I'm not far off from being on those other people's shoes and asking people for advice. And I, whenever someone comes to me and says, what is like the big thing? I always say, it may sound annoying, it may seem tedious, get reps at a lower level. Like, make your mistakes at a lower level, because the Moose, the nice thing there for me is going into Toronto in that situation, I knew some, like, I shouldn't say didn't know anything. I knew, how it was going to work for questions. I knew, like, and then that's something that I maybe took for granted, but you go into it raw, you have no idea. So I did. I had some idea there, but Toronto was different than the Moose. It was a lot of coverage there then.
For the Marlies, you mean?
Yeah, there was a lot. Like, they won the Calder Cup that year.
Oh, yeah.
If you look back at the roster of reporters that were writing there, all of us went on to work in the industry. So Scott Wheeler,
Oh,
well, he
really?
was working in the industry. Yeah, so The Athletic actually had Scott part of his duties as being on a staff writer for The Athletic Toronto. He did some Leaf stuff too, was he was our Marlies guy. So it was me, him, Mike Stevens, who went on to work for the Hockey News with me as well, and Yahoo. Haley, and then the next year, Haley Salvian
Wow.
was there as well, and they had both her and Scott doing Marlies coverage. I think they wrote, like, Haley, I believe, I can't remember. I think she said that at one point, she's also working for CBC on shift work, so I don't remember exactly that, my memory. But point
No.
is, there was a lot of really
Talented.
up and coming reporters, and I remember feeling really intimidated, to be honest with you, like really, really intimidated. That first year, they went on the Calder Cup run. I actually wasn't there for the Calder Cup run. I went back to home to go to summer camp, which I thought was the biggest mistake ever, but it's the best decision I ever made.
Why is
Like,
that?
not because I think that when you're in that grind of chasing and chasing and chasing, you have this idea that this thing, this thing, this thing, this thing is the thing I need to be there for. But life is still life. And especially when you're young, it's so important, in my opinion, to have those experiences. Like, I've been going to the same summer camp from the age of like 7 to, that was my last year at 20 or 19, whatever, right? And I didn't want to miss that. It was the best summer of my life. And I think that a big part of me, maybe because I was alongside guys like Scott Wheeler, right? I thought, like, oh, if I don't do this, I'm not going to be as good as Scott Wheeler. But you get to a point kind of when you realize, two things. One, I'm younger than Scott. I'm in school and it's different. But also, two, it's like everyone has a different path. Like, if I don't do this Calder Cup finals, it doesn't mean that, like, I'm never going to cover an NHL game, which is what my thought process was. And now, I'm a Jets writer for Sportsnet on a freelance basis and going to all these games. So, yeah, it's a big thing, I would say, because, like, and I just remember being so, I don't know if you felt this too, but I was so like in my head during that first year with the Marlies. And maybe like I just remember this, like Dubas would be around. And I remember just being like, oh my God, like that's crazy. Like he must be reading not my stuff, but if he is, like I would just get so in my head.
No,
And I was such a small, and then you realize like everyone else is doing their own stuff,
no, just to like chip in a little bit, it's like I remember Ian Mendes kind of telling me something along the lines of like, you're not like I was so nervous last year when I started covering the team, and it, you know, we have different paths, but it came out of the blue and everything. And he said, you know, give it a year and you'll probably feel more comfortable. And I remember going into training camp this year, and you know, there's a bit of differences and stuff like that, a couple new players, but man, you just feel so much more at home, and you realize like, oh, okay, like I'm okay. Like it's not as nerve-wracking like I kind of felt. And you know, getting to know, like, I don't know, Ryan Bonus knows who you are. Like that's a little bit of its plug, but like seriously, like just you people know you, and you don't need to be as worried about like, oh my God, do I know where everything is and who to talk to? It just becomes more normalized. And I feel like if I had known that, you know, maybe like on, you know, the first week on the job, it would have really helped me. Like, it's okay. You're gonna be a fish out of water. Like, everything's new and that's okay.
And it's like you mentioned like Ryan Bonus or just someone that you like, because people maybe don't realize like the staff and the media, they're all within a like a hallway radius, and it's not even so much. I think people think relationships is just like breaking trades and stuff. It's no, it's just, hey, how's it going? Or not even that, but just the security people at the buffet, like just being able to walk into any workplace and know what you're doing is great. A year full of, I have no idea what's going on. Who do I talk to? Whatever. It sucks, man. It's a net, but I feel you there. Like it's a grind.
Yeah, and I guess maybe to transition a little bit for you, because obviously you're covering the Marlies, and then you come back to the Hockey News, and like maybe talk about that transition going back to Winnipeg and covering the team, and kind of what happened there.
Well, I had a weird road to that. So first year university, as I said, I was really in my head. And I walked into journalism school at Ryerson, and I kind of had a, I don't want to say a chip on my shoulder, but like I have ADHD, as a lot of people do, and I wasn't very good at academics in high school. And this was kind of my thing, so to speak. And I went into Ryerson, now TMU, where everyone was kind of really skilled at this too. And I kind of thought that, like, I gotta, show them like I'm the Toronto Marlies reporter my first year. And I didn't mean it in like an in your face way. I just think that was like my mindset. And I learned a lot. The downfall of that though was in my second year, I went really, balls to the wall on Marley's sort of stuff. And it kind of hindered into my academic stuff. And, I had to drop out of some classes. And I actually took the next year off of school. And then COVID happened. So my year off, so to speak, became in a weird way a great opportunity because looking back on it, what happened was I was able to in Winnipeg do all these courses and catch up so that when COVID kind of died down, I went back for my fourth year. So while during COVID, I covered some Manitoba Moose stuff, went back to doing that, and that's kept me busy. Then when I went back, I remember this. I know the date, it's so weird, but it's September 17th.
That's okay.
And I was walking in my Osgoode station, and I got a DM from Ryan Kennedy. And he was like, "Hey, we're looking for a web editor. Would you be interested?" I was like, "What? Like, oh my God, like even me considered." It turns out that Stephen Ellis had recommended me, and he
Oh,
recommended me because of the fact, or put my name in the because of the fact that I did AHL stuff. And that's again another just lesson I think for all of you guys, like doing the lower levels is so important. Like I really can't stress that enough. And maybe that'll come back up again in this podcast, but I just think it's the most important thing for someone. So reach out to me. I looked at it, but I was like, okay, I worked really hard to get back to Ryerson because I had to leave for a bit and I don't want to screw this up. It's kind of in between. I'm like, oh gosh, like this could be my shot, but also like I can't not finish this. So I whatever, had an interview with them. And I think in the interview I explained like what my workload was like and what it'd be like, and then they could be in touch. I thought I'd bombed it. I was like, no chance. Like what I like I but I genuinely felt like there was no chance. And then I got an email saying, "Hey, we filled it elsewhere," which was a great decision by them because they picked Jonathan Tovell, who's currently their deputy managing
I
editor,
know
and is
John
an
a bit.
absolute he is a horse. This guy is the craziest editor I've ever seen, still an absolute horse. Like I don't know how he does it. He's amazing. They made the right choice there, 100%. They're like, but we would like you to do some. We have a freelance spot for AHL and ECHL for the magazine. I was like, unreal. But here's how I got my big break, and this is crazy. Is it all started from a DM from John Tuttle
Oh, really?
because I made a tweet saying. And I don't know if we ex I don't I don't believe that we had said I was going to do web stuff for the THN. Like there was maybe a chance, but it wasn't because it's such a big operation, especially now it's ridiculously huge. But they'd have the magazine staff and the website, they're separate. So I didn't even know that. And but I knew I wanted to ask eventually. But John reached out and said, "Hey man, welcome to THN," because I announced I was doing some freelancing. Let me know if you want to if you want to do some writing for the website." And I was like, I actually have a pretty good story. I knew at the time, I'd been working on it that Ville Heinola's camp was not happy, and I wrote an article and I got his agent to go on the record, and that article was my first one of the Hockey News, and it took off. Like it was really, I worked a long time on that process of triple, quadruple checking sources on every end with certain things, and it's still one of my proudest moments because I waited, for the right time there, and from there I just joined the rotation. Then we started some podcasts there, and then yeah, for about 2 years I was kind of in the mix at THN, and then did some Leafs games or like not about the Leafs but national stuff. So it kind of happened really quickly, and I think I regained a lot of my passion. Or it took it to a new level. I remember going to my first game, NHL game credentialed, and it was like the craziest experience.
I still remember mine. It's November 2nd, I think, or November 1st last year, or 2023,
Was it
LA.
Ottawa?
Yeah, it was in Ottawa, and it was like the Kings, and I still remember LA went up 3-0. I mean, it was pretty recently, but I still have it somewhere in my house, just like the credentials. So I want to kind of circle back. We can maybe talk a little bit about kind of now being at Sportsnet a little bit, but you talk about that Vinny Hinola piece and or Vili, sorry. And talking about kind of reporting and triple checking, like what's that process like for you to gain sources, to double check that you have the right information, to reach out to agents? Like, how does that all come together for you?
Well, I would say the number one thing I live by is you need to remember that you need to remember that this isn't a game. So when you're giving information out, like this has to be, if you want to be a credible source of information, you need to try your hardest possible. And even your hardest may not amount to the story running or this quote, this tweet, whatever it may be. My process is sort of, throughout the years of working at, when you're at the Marlies games, the scouts are accessible. Moose games, Jets games, scouts are one thing. Then you start to be at these games and you meet people that are scouts. You meet assistant GMs, you meet director of player, you meet people, agents as well, mutually beneficial relationship there in a lot of fronts. But what is really important with all those things is everybody that you're talking to and building a relationship with has a different perspective, objective, agenda. So it's kind of like weeding through the minds to find out what's true and what's not. And I think for me, it's always you need two sources, like people that know knowledge of the situation that are involved. And wording's important. I've learned it the hard way a lot of times. I've learned it, with certain, just nothing like, I mean, more so like someone get like, hey, I wouldn't frame it that way. And then, you don't burn a bridge, but you're like, okay, this guy maybe doesn't want to chat with me as much. It probably caused him some stress. So I don't know if that's a good answer. I'm trying to think. I just think that it's really important to try to meet people, but don't try too hard. You have to understand, you have to be fine with rejection. Like not everyone's gonna want to just, shoot the shit with you. Like it's a reality. I'm not an insider by any means, but the greatest value of knowing people inside the game, assistant coaches, coaches at both levels, is just understanding from a background perspective. Like people think their relationships just delve into breaking some story, but that's not the truth. The truth is that it helps empower writers like us to tell you what we see with our eyes or that what's happening because we have an idea of some of the inner workings. Like that's the true beauty to me, I think. Being an insider of those people, that's a whole other level that
That's a
I'll never
different,
know.
but just even to speak about my own personal experience, and I wouldn't say I'm too like locked in on the sense in terms of knowing, because I'm still pretty new to it, and there's like a new front office and everything. But I can share like with I covered the PWHL, right? Covered
Right.
Dog the Charge, and talking about relationship building. Their GM would show up, and I said hi, and I would just talk to him here and there, and then over time, you get to know him better, you interview them here, and it just kind of builds, because I don't just go up to them with a mic and say, tell me about everything, right? You just get to know them, and if you guys click and vibe, then you get to know a bit more, kind of have a little bit more background. And I'm not saying like I'm a PWHL insider or anything like that, and or any, but at the same time, that's how you build it. It's not just by trying to kind of, hey, give me information, vice versa. You just get to
No.
like know about their kids, know where they went on vacation, just get to know the person, and then there's a bit of that trust that kind of comes over time. If you're just around them, they get to know you, they know that you're not just going to tweet everything they say, like whatever, like
Yeah.
it
That's
takes
the
time.
biggest thing too, is proving to people like you can talk to me, I'm not going to just tweet it. And there's a lot of people, unfortunately, that don't give off a trustworthy presence,
Yeah,
Like
exactly.
they don't they and through their actions mainly. But yeah, you're right. And I mean, I'm not surprised that you're that way because you're so good at getting people to open up that I'm
don't know
sure it
about
only takes a
that,
couple.
but I
Yeah,
appreciate it.
I've been really reserved during this conversation. You're
Yeah,
right.
exactly. I guess now, just like with Sportsnet, what's maybe been like the one thing that's kind of stood out for you that's maybe been different just being with us here? You know, we got the job at essentially the same time, but just what's that this first year been like for you, and maybe one thing that kind of sticks out?
A lot more eyes on you,
Hmm.
is what I'll say. I was actually sitting right here when I got the job officially. I was on a Zoom call with our boss, one of our bosses, Gary Mello. I just like I look back and I don't know about you, man, but like the last, I mean, must be, this is 6 months,
Six
man. Like
months,
I've
yeah, 6 months. Crazy.
flown by,
Yeah.
flown by, like. I would say that the biggest thing that sticks out is a lot of eyes are on you. So in any profession, any walk of life, you have bad days and you got bad articles. I used to really hyper fixate on outlines and of like the before the writing process for every piece I did as a freelancer. Now in this role with how often you and I file pieces, we don't really have that bit
No.
of perfection that we just got to do it. And it's been a blessing. Like, I think I'm a way better writer from 6 months, but the bad days, they sting at you because you're like, you put it in, you don't feel the best about it. And then what, in my experience, I feel like it's just kind of worked out that every time there's been an article, I was like, that sucked. Someone's like, hey, I read your article, you know, or good article or whatever, whether it's good or whatever it may be, or just, I didn't know you wrote from Sportsnet. And it makes me go crazy sometimes, but I'm trying to manage the highs and the lows of it. A lot more tension, I think, from just online or act like people I in walks of life, I think.
And
That's a big thing, yeah.
do you get noticed in Winnipeg at all? I'm curious.
Never.
Never? Okay.
Never. I mean, no, actually. Like
Like, I just would
the
have
only
thought
time
because
I get
it's Winnipeg.
noticed, actually, okay, I shouldn't say that. The only time I get noticed is when I'm with Connor Rapchak of W Winnipeg Sports Talk.
Yeah, there you go. The goat. Yeah.
He's the GOAT. Yeah, my man. He drives me every game. Like he, like Connor's. Like I got a face for radio, so I'm not. No, I've never.
That's not
I
true,
don't
but.
know. I shouldn't say it. Thank you. I shouldn't say that. I think I've been once or twice. Someone's asked me, "I'm Jacob Stoller," but no. I mean, and the thing is, it's like I'm on Twitter and I'm active, but I'm not crazy active because I've really tried to dedicate to like the writing of it. I don't
Need
give
to
game updates.
teach me. I'm too online right now. I need
No,
to.
I don't think you're too online. I think that like you're really good at it, man. Like I
Yeah,
think that's a
no.
good. I think you specialize in it.
But
I've never been.
that's the thing. Like, you know, you talk about learning on the job. Like, I tweeted something out of context, and like the next day of practice, I get, it wasn't a roar, but it was like, hey, don't do that. And
Yeah.
you're just talking about like kind of the eyes on you. Like, I would have never had that happen a year ago, like just if I
Yeah.
made a mistake. And that's like the
Yeah.
interesting thing is like I feel it's like almost not that I'm walking on eggshells, I wouldn't say that, but there is something where it's like,
More responsibility.
yeah, you have more responsibility. You have to be freaking right and you can't
Yeah.
make too many mistakes. And we all make mistakes or whatever. And
Yeah.
sometimes people disagree. Trust me, I've had my run-ins with people disagreeing with my articles, but if I feel like it's coming from an honest place, I don't kind of begrudge it, but it is interesting. I feel like people listening to this might think we're really full of ourselves, and I don't think that's the case. I think it's more just like the journey kind of to where we are, and hopefully, continuing to do this for a long time, but just how it kind of changes, like every step you take.
Well, I'll give an example of that. Is it's like, so in the NHL, for practice particularly, the room is open, right? So I didn't know that until I was 20. So from 17 to 20, I'm in Moose games. I thought that every single NHL game, they're bringing the guy out to the backdrop, and it's a scrum style. Then you learn that. You know, a lot of the conversations that you have to practice is you just go up to a person and say, hey, so and so, do a quick second of chat, or you mean you don't even go on the record, whatever it may be. So what you learn too is when you're younger, or sorry, when you're just starting, this idea that you're always asking these formal questions sort of in a certain box. And then you start to realize it's a process. like to get the info, like to tell a story, and it's not just in that moment. And that's such a different feeling too, I think, as well, because and I just think that when you're early, I think, and if anyone's listening to this that's in the middle of pursuing journalism or wanting to, I think the biggest mistake people make earlier on is trying to do it all at once. Like trying to do the big, like, boom, like crazy story or hot take or whatever. And like, it just doesn't work that way. And it's not even that fun, because if you do that like 500 times, like you're just gonna get tired of it. Though you won't, you'll never do that 500 times. But like the journey is the most fun part, in my opinion.
No, I think what you're touching on is almost, at least what springs to mind is like the relationship building with
For
players,
sure.
people. And I mean, you talked about it with like coaches or scouts and agents and all that. But like, for example, like I'd say Drake Batherson, I know pretty well. We're not buddies or anything like that, but I know him pretty well because his sister got drafted into the BWHL. I did a story that
Right.
I just saw them at the draft, everything like that. And for example, I had this story about Daniel Alfredsson. I interviewed him, but before I went to interview him, I went up to Batherson because I know he's pretty good. I kind of he We have a good vibe. He's much more
Yeah.
nicer. He'll say something, and he says, something along the lines of, "Alfie could still play in the NHL if, at this age. It just he needs to keep his feet and maybe get in a bit better shape. But otherwise, he still has it, right?" And I probably don't get that quote a year from now or a year ago just because he doesn't know me as well. He's not as comfortable, all these
Yeah.
things. But if I tried to pester him all the time last year and be like, give me a quote, give me this, that, he'd get sick of me, right? So it's just
For
about
sure.
know people, talking, I trying to talk off the record, just getting like, hey, where did you go for your summer vacation? What kind of sick do you have? What, I don't know, whatever, like just
You
anything.
just talk with them. Well, I think, and you kind of mentioned this as well, but it's really important to, I lost my train of thought. Sorry, it's what were we just
Okay.
saying a second ago?
Talking
Batherson.
about the relationships.
Oh yeah, sorry. So what's interesting too is with that is building a relationship while also knowing, if Drake Batherson has a bad game or does a turnover in the blue line, you have to write about it. And that's the thing that you asked me the biggest change. It's sort of that, be on the beat in an NHL team. You want to build relationships with players, not in a friendship way, but I talk about just, that respect. So if you have a one-on-one feature, you interview them, you're getting good answers, they respect you. But you always have to understand that, if someone does a brutal turnover, they lose the game on it. It's your job to ask them what happened on that play. So that's the biggest thing too, because I think the lines have been blurred in journalism in our
Yes.
era. And I would say I'm a traditionalist still in terms of some of those principles. And I think that, the other day, if you really are worried about people not liking you, any of these players or any of these people in the game in 10 years from now, whatever it may be, they'll either A, respect you for the fact you did your job, or B, they won't care. But guess what? It was 10 years ago by that point. Like, who cares? You gotta just do your job and stay
I
level.
also think like, and maybe it's just my personality, I try to be a very nice person all the time, and
I hope
sometimes
so.
but I can be maybe more stronger with my words. But I remember earlier this year, a couple of us, the Sens, were struggling, and we're like, we have to go to the rink today because we wrote stories that were damning of the team, right? And who am I to kind of run away from
Yeah.
talking to whoever who had a bad game or the coach or whatever, because I wrote a tough story? Like, that's kind of chickening out of it. And I think if you're nice to people, you're not rude, you're understanding, and then you write something harsh about them, I think for the most part, I don't know if you feel this way, Jacob, but players know when they aren't playing well, right? For the most.
Course, yeah.
And if you write something when they haven't scored in 11 games, if you say X player is the worst player in the world of all time, yeah, they'll probably not like you because that's not unfair. But if you write something fair and valid, they get it. And I think it's.
Yeah, and sometimes they might ask for clarification, which is good. You want them, like I want a relationship with a player so that if I do write something that is that I'm criticize them or it's critical, if they want to talk to me for a second, like, absolutely, I'm here to clear it up with them. And that's what you want. And sometimes they might be pissed at you. Like, they may hate what you wrote. It's happened a lot in certain situations for me. I'm not gonna to get into specifics, but throughout my
What did you
career,
say about Connor McDavid? No, okay.
right? Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, or Hellebuck. Yeah,
exactly.
exactly. But there's been times, and I'm not saying that every situation at the end they are my friend or even agree with me or like me more than before, but I know. Well, I'd hope that they respect me, that I'm here to face, like, you can rip me all you want here. Like, I'm not gonna, and when you're a writer, there's those battles with PR, team personnel. Those are all happening in situations, but it's never personal. Like, you gotta be a goldfish. Every day's a new day. And that's the bigger thing too, with being a bigger outlet now, and being that is there is that responsibility that you mentioned, Alex, like, that weight sort of, and you can't really run away from your mistakes, so to
Yeah,
speak.
but it's also fun. Like, I don't know.
It's so fun.
I sometimes
Yeah.
like I play. I'm a decent tennis player, and I'll play guys in the summer. And then sometimes like my buddies will be like, "Hey, I found your article." I'm like, "Really? Like, cool." Like, and like they're hockey fans, but I'm not. Like, I don't know. It's just cool to have people being like, "Hey, I really liked your article." I'm like,
Yeah.
"Oh, you're
No,
really
I.
reading it."
That part's been really cool as well. Like, I think that the visibility of the content's awesome. I like the fact that my insights are one of the, if you go on SEO or certain thing like search engine optimization or just Google, like SportsCenter's going to be near the top, if not the top, a lot of times. And I think that it's cool to know that when you're writing that, like, your perspective of this game is going to be seen to people. A lot of people say, I don't care if the masses agree with me or disagree with me. I just want to tell a good story. And that's what I think is cool about this, is that, this perspective, mine will, it'll be there. Like, someone will see it. And I do think that they're pretty clearly that people have liked them, I think, from what I've heard. And, it's nice. I think that, Winnipeg is a market that, not to say that you can't come here and come from somewhere else and write. Like, Gary Lawless, for example, an absolute legend in my opinion when he was here, wasn't from Winnipeg, but spent 20 years, still lives here in the summers or has a place out here. But, like, he spent a lot. Now, you gotta know the market, understand it. And I'm glad, for my career's sake, if I hadn't gone away to Toronto and met people I met, experiences and connections and stuff like that, I don't think I'd be as good as a reporter as I am. But I think that, sorry, what I'm going to say is, like, that has all helped me, because living in Winnipeg, you still have to have that Winnipeg DNA or understand the market, because it's different than other markets. It really is.
I totally get it. Like, I think even from my perspective, Ottawa and Winnipeg have a some similarity. I wouldn't say it's exact,
Yeah.
but just being a small Canadian market. But yeah, I definitely feel like one of my attributes is knowing the market so well. And that's the same for you. Like, you literally enjoyed the 1.0 Manitoba Moose. Like, not a lot of people
Yeah.
can say that. And I think that makes you a better writer and understand, like, that people who are reading your stuff typically from the city, right? So they know the history, they know what's happened, right? And to have
For
that
sure.
and being a fan of the team too.
I'll put it this way. It's like, if you got a job to cover the Winnipeg Jets and your first year in Winnipeg, and maybe you shack up downtown. There's some nice apartments there, Turner Square, whatever it may be, right? And you're just trying to know the city, and you're there. Your commute is from your apartment to work, and you don't really get the experience all of Winnipeg, which takes a bit of time, in my opinion. Probably have a different perspective of a lot of the things I think that have to do with the market, and maybe you buy in a bit more to the idea of why no one wants to be here, and will never, this city will never be the favorite for free agents. I'm not going to try to convince otherwise, and I don't think that it will be out of the 32. But I think just understanding the positives of this city, the negatives, all that stuff, go into speaking to the fans who kind of, as you said, are the most important people to read it. Like, the people that are reading your coverage.
I think that's a perfect segue because you wrote a story on that, those lines about Connor Hellebuck, and obviously there's the Four Nations facing off. Well, it's going to be two on Thursday night, but just what's it been like for you? Like, what have you made of Connor Hellebuck? Maybe talk about a bit about the story, but also just how he's really excelled at the Four Nations when it's been a question of how well he'll perform on the big stage because of his last two kind of playoff performances where he's struggled.
There is a, I don't know if it made the story. I'm blanking right now, but I don't know if there's a quote either. Is it, or it didn't make it. No, I don't think it did. So I to understand Connor Hellebuck, you ask him about how last year's playoffs went. And he says he watched it and that was the best game he played. And I believe in it, he says. And I asked him when I interviewed him, why do you believe in it? He said, 'cause it works. Like he looked at me straight in the eye. I was like, because it has. I played 60 games, won the Vezina, and then 5 games changed it all. Like, that's what do you mean? But the way he looked, he said, it works. It's like, I'm not betting against that guy. Like he is just such a different animal. And it's been so cool to cover him because in the NBA, the NHL, sorry, the NFL, we hear about these guys. In the NBA, they call it Mamba mentality. This sort of like, I don't care. I'm going to go balls to the wall here on this, and I'm going to win. Hockey, we see that. We do actually. But it comes out different. We maybe don't see it outwardly as much because there's that whole like your coach to kind of not be that way. But Hellebuck isn't like these other guys. So he can kind of be that way. Like he this isn't a guy that played the program and was media trained at 14 or all these things, and he isn't, doing a horse. He does a lot of interviews, a lot of scrums, because obviously he's a franchise player. But if you get him one-on-one in a setting where his brain's not turned off, he'll give you an honest answer, and he's not gonna bite the like bite his tongue either. So it's very interesting. And I watched the Four Nations, and I just think, like, be honest, I wondered, like, will this be a tournament where it's skill on skill, and it's just madness, and like, can he keep up with that and all these things? And it actually turned out to be one where it's very tight, at least Canada and USA was very tight, and there's a lot of tips on net front stuff. Like there was that series against Colorado, but man, Hellebuck looks solid. Like I've never seen a goaltender, and I remember Carey Price's days, but just the way that Hellebuck, how he takes over a game without moving so much in his crease. Like this isn't a guy that like his slight lateral movement is crazy. He's just calm deep in his net and just reading every shot. And I've never seen it before. And it's brilliant. Like I never thought that I would enjoy covering a franchise goaltender so much, but it's unbelievable, really. Like it's and the city just loves him. Like this is our era of or this generation's Teemu Selanne, I would say. Line A was more so, but I mean, I think he's starting to become that beloved person.
How do you like in what ways do you find the city's like falling in love with him outside of the fact that he's always winning the Vezina trophy and getting them to the playoffs?
I mean, I think part of it is I think he is the number one example, him and Mark Scheifele, of what the Jets want and what the city wants. They want guys that are great at their craft and whatever, but that are, I want to be here. I want to be in the city. And that means something to these people. If you're a Winnipegger, you're maybe, for an example, I live rather than Toronto. You tell somebody you're from Winnipeg, insert joke here about how you live in a trash bin, trash hole. If you even just living in Winnipeg, there's parts we hate here. The winters are cold. Your cars don't start on a Monday morning, and you're like, this sucks. And you probably have had a frostbite recently. But there's a lot to love about the city. The people are salt of the earth. I think that our food's great. I'm not going to give you the whole spiel, but when someone like Connor Hellebuck and Mark Scheifele buy into that thing, it makes you beloved. And Hellebuck is like the guy likes to ice fish. He loves fishing. He likes what you could do with Winnipeg in the winter. don't say I'd ever ice fish, to be honest, but makes me want to try it now because of Bucky. But I think that just he's always been one to credit the fans, and you can tell that he really appreciates their support. And after games, there was that piece I wrote about how he went like this with the logo, like he tugged on the crest. And I asked him about it, and he said, "I want to give them a little piece of me, like what that moment felt like." And he just, at every chance, he just really finds a way to thank them. And I think that people appreciate it. I will take back what I said. I think that the Salani 2.0, that's more Line A. That was Patty's kind of rock star score, like this
I was one
crazy
of
young
them. I have a
phenom.
Patrick Laine jersey somewhere in this house.
You should, because that was awesome. That was so fun when he was like that.
Oh my God.
But yeah, I think Hellebuck's just a special cat, and it's looking like it could be a fun spring here in the prairies.
I guess with that, because I felt last year as a pseudo Jets fan. I don't know if I'm allowed to call myself a Jets fan, but in this household, let's say we are Jets fans.
Right.
And I'm curious for you, like, what's different about this team? Like, I talked to Sean Reynolds maybe a month or two ago, and they at the time the Jets had kind of been going on their December slide a little bit. But you know, last year one of the best teams in the league struggled in the first round. Even the year before they squeaked in, but they struggled in the playoffs. Like, what's different about this team, do you think? And do you think that they're, you know, on a pathway, as you said, to have a long, you know, playoff run this year?
Guys get sick and tired of losing. It comes down to that. I think that they're sick. Guys also get sick and tired of being pampered. Josh Morrissey said they came in this year and were like to Arneil, we want to be coaching a championship team. And that's what's been happening this year. Like there's no more handholding. During Paul Maurice, as good as he did, and I really want to make this very clear before I say it. Paul Maurice did a lot of great things for this organization, for this city. But there was a lot of the room ran itself. And as we saw, that became problematic and some bad habits formed. So in the bonus era, that was all about resetting the culture, a lot of handholding there. So that when, they play like crap against Vegas, bonus rips them, right? You learn a bit there about pushback, so to speak. You go into Colorado series and they didn't adapt. They didn't, right? And they didn't have that intensity. It was such a gratifying 82 games that they were able to give that next level, but also the coaching didn't adapt. But it was all about lessons and handholding. There was kind of this silver lining. This year now, it's like, screw that. We're here to win. Like, or they, if we suck, we want to know we suck. Okay? If like we're in on winning. We've got a goaltender here in his prime, one of the best we've seen in decades, or at least since Carey Price's in his prime. And these guys don't come around often. We are all, and I think to me too, I think that everybody's gotten better. They're playing like a unit, but Scheifele and Connor, we've never seen play this well. Josh Morrissey's still excellent. Hellebuck, obviously. Everyone's getting better. And I think the core of it is they're so pissed off from last year. So pissed off from every year of just fizzling out. I think they hate it. Like they just can't stand it. And I think you feel that. And these guys want to win, but they want to win together. There's a lot of close bonds on that team. And I think that there's an idea too, is if we don't win, like it's going to look a lot different. So we kind of want to do this together. It's a really close locker room there. It's different, but it's very close.
I guess is this the year like that they have to go all in? I know you talked about it on like Winnipeg Sports Talk with Connor a little bit, but just like, is this the year to send five first round picks, maybe not five, but just like kind of back up the Brinks truck, pay whatever, and kind of go all in? Because of course, Nikolaj Ehlers is a UFA. They have other UFAs, Pionk. Although obviously the cap's rising, but who knows what that means, like internal cap, everything. Like, there's so much going on, and they're the, you know, one of the two or three best teams in the league. Like, how much do you think Chevy's going to go all in this year?
Well, I think that Chevy's always going to be aggressive, and like I think he sees an opportunity here. But the Winnipeg Jets cannot do what. So remember when Tampa Bay traded a first, second, third, fourth, fifth, a cow, a horse, a duck for Tanner Janot? Chevy can't do that because Winnipeg can't sign guys. They can't go out and do what Tampa did, sign Jake Guentzel. They can't replenish that way. Draft picks are one of their biggest forms of asset capital, whether you make the pick or use it for a trade. So they got to be careful. Now, with that said, Kevin Cheveldayoff will never have a better opportunity right now with Ehlers still here, right? I don't think he'll return personally, but we'll see. Kyle Connor making 7.25 or some steal before he gets the crazy amount that he will get. You have all this cap space, right? You've got roster flexibility galore right now. You got to use it. Like, you have the best, like, you have no choice. I just think there'll be certain. I don't see Cheveldayoff punting on a third just for a very marginal upgrade. You know, I don't think it's in his DNA. Like everything is very calculated. I think that they don't see it that way. So, but they're not making a selection in the first round this year. I'd be really surprised, like shocked actually. Like that pick is gone, man. Next year's.
Do you think it's like you floated, great report about Jared McCann? There's some Braden Schenn rumors, Rasmus Ristolainen. Like, do you think that's where, as you mentioned, like they'll draft assets are like the number one thing they have, and that if you're going to use it, you get it for like even just not just for this season, but a long-term play. Like, do you think that's maybe more where they're headed?
I don't know for certain. I would say that Cheveldayoff, like, they really liked what they had in Monahan for that little bit. Try to sign him. Maybe I think they can re-sign Brock Nelson to get him. But if not, I wonder if they still value X amount of months with a Brock Nelson, so to speak, and the chance of maybe re-signing him over player X for 2 years. And so you have to weigh those possibilities. I think that absolutely part of some of the deals that we will see are Chevy getting a head start on next year's free agency. I think, and by that I mean, we've got a lot of cap space coming up, free agents to sign. Kyle Connor is eligible for an extension, as is Sandberg, RFA. Pionk needs to be signed, as we kind of mentioned off the hop. So some guys, not everyone's staying, right? Those guys are, but I follow Appleton. Who knows? Ehlers, whatever. It's like half the Vlad Mestikov, like half the roster is up for a contract. So if he can make a move that helps him now and next year, that's probably his preference. But as I said, they're trying to win a Stanley Cup. Like, they need to get past the second round, I believe, this year. Like, they need that playoff revenue. They need, to get close at the very least. Obviously, they want to win a Stanley Cup, and I think they believe they can. And you have to make uncomfortable decisions, which they will. I just don't think they'll make unnecessary ones. So you're not going to see them trade like a fifth, a fourth, a sixth, just to bring in like these extra depth guys, just like sit in the press box, just to be all like loaded in,
I mean,
and
they're
they
pretty
see a
deep
value.
already, so it's not
They're
like
pretty deep. Yeah, exactly. Like they'll be careful in that sense, but this first they're not using. I'd be shocked. Probably just the second and next year's third or whatever away as well. Like I think they're going to bring in two or three guys. I believe it. Like, I think last year they had Colin Miller,
Toffoli.
Toffoli, Monahan. This year will be, I think, forward D and then maybe another forward, maybe another D. I don't know. But I really, really firmly believe that we see reinforcements brought in.
I guess with that, the question about this team in the regular season has been like the narrative a little bit has been like, oh, it's just Connor Hellebuck, and then they find goals. But this team's first in goals for, first in goals allowed. You look at their, analytics, they're a pretty good team as well. Like, how real, like you said, they believe that they're a cup contender. Like, how close do you think this team is to becoming, to legitimately winning the Stanley Cup this season?
I think they're a second line center and top four defenseman away from me feeling confident in that. As the years, I've warmed up to the idea of them being a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, but I don't know. I want to see what the deadline looks like. You know, I think if you add a Brock Nelson in the equation, it's great. But what does he look like alongside Ehlers and Perfetti? Yes, Perfetti, Nemestikov, and Ehlers have been good recently. I know they want to tap into that, but I saw 40 games of crap. Like that, there was nothing there, and they probably tell you that as well. They weren't jiving. Like as a line, I'm talking about. So that's where I'm a little bit weird. I think that, you know, you could drink the Kool-Aid a bit on Nemestikov improving, but I think that come playoff time, it'll bite you in the butt. So I think there has to be an upgrade there. Defenseman, I think, you know, still, I think that everyone needs to be the Samer Pionk pairing is rock solid. I think they need an upgrade on Logan Stanley on the bottom pairing, and I think that you know, Dylan DeMello is probably best used in a more sheltered role and then kill penalties, but maybe not, you know, as much as he is now with Morrissey. You still have the option to play him there if you bring someone else. You know, you have that the different combinations you can do, but I believe in this team. I think that they can go on a run. There's just the playoffs are a different game, man. Like you saw it last year, and I know this team's different than last year, but like,
Do you think about, like, I always think about it this way, is like outside of the St. Louis Blues in 2019, which I really feel like that in a sense is their model. They're not exactly the same type of team, but
I know what you're saying.
with like out without a real like bona fide top
Superstar.
five player in the league. And I guess you could argue that's Connor Hellebuck, but like is that the formula for this team in a sense? Like is that what kind of holds you back, is that they don't have at least a forward or a defenseman that is like that elite player.
With Connor Hellebuyck. So that is the argument. You know, the Montreal Canadiens made it to the finals on the backs of Carey Price. If the Jets are going anywhere, it is because Connor Hellebuyck brought them there. Now, that's not to say this is just Connor Hellebuyck and Co., which we talked about. There's a difference. It's just that this team is more than Hellebuyck, but you're kidding yourself if you don't think that the engine here is Connor Hellebuyck. And I think, you know, I've talked about this a lot recently, and it's interesting you bring it up. It's like, what is this roster really like in terms of past winners? And it's not like LA was, because they were a bit of a different look than them. I think, well, look at this Jets team, it's a really, really good, well-balanced team that does have people that check off the boxes. So Mark Scheifele now is a number one center. Always has been, but I think he's gone to, you know, pretty good. Defensively, still, I think there's a bit to be desired. But it has improved this year. Kyle Connor, that's a stud, right? Like that's a star winger, like maybe superstar level winger. Josh Morrissey, superstar defenseman. You know, he's a top 10 defenseman in my book. Maybe top five, six, seven. Hellebuck is Hellebuck. That checks off all the boxes you need. So it maybe isn't the typical, maybe don't have a Barkov or like a hulking crazy number one center that makes you think, oh, this team is not equipped to be there. But they do have a lot of the boxes on paper. And that's what makes me optimistic there. But as I said, it's going to come down to Bucky.
That's
His
interesting.
workload makes me nervous, though, I'll tell you that. Like I think he's running what 70% of the games right now. Like that's got to go down the stretch
And
here. It really does.
he's one of the four goalies playing this week, right, too.
You know, you can't have him burning out in April. You can't. And Connor's been good. Just like bring
They
it
can't
down to
win.
like 60%, 40. I don't care. Like I think like to me it's like every third game, let's say, like I think Connor should be playing at this point.
You know what popped into my mind a little bit with that kind of argument about, like, a top five or six defenseman, one of the better centers in the league, one of, a superstar or star winger, is even in a sense, I mean, they're not exactly the same, but to Florida. The problem was Florida had like a 50 goal guy, two 40 goal guys, one of like, but in a sense, like you wouldn't say Florida has like one of, maybe you can argue Kachuk or Barkov, but like that, like one of the best five or six players in the world, right? They just had a
But
clear.
they had a collection of guys that are in number 7 to 30 range of in the league. Oh, I hear you. I agree. I think here's the one difference. I think that Kachuk is one of the number one clutch players in the league. So, maybe if you look at who's the best playoff performer of all time, or sorry, of this generation, Kachuk might be there. Verhaeghe too, who's a sneaky good, just like
Such a good
clutch
player.
machine. It's insane. So yeah, I do think I see what you mean. I mean, Florida played well as a team too. They had their guys that had, but that was a good team. And also the Jets, when I mentioned their people, they have that unreal shutdown line. Lowry, Appleton, I didn't even mention them once. I'm Lowry's the best, in my opinion, shutdown center in the league. And I don't say that lightly. Third line, like that's who you want, and that's what you need in the Cup series. So that's I can't believe it took us that long to mention that
I
Lowry.
know.
He's been
I
injured,
know.
so
Yeah, I know. I'm a Adam Lowry sycophant. I feel like you love being here in Ottawa because basically all the time I'll be like, you know who's really good? Gabe Vilardi. Or you know who's really good? Adam Lowry. You know who's really good? Josh Morrissey. And people are like, okay, stop with the Jets talk. Like, talk about someone else. But I'm always pumping the tires for those guys. But I really appreciate you taking the time and doing this. I feel like I've kept you so long, so I don't want to keep you too long, but I guess before I let you go on all things Jets, I have a kind of fun question for you, and it's if tomorrow you were christened with the becoming the new commissioner of the NHL, and Gary Bettman for some reason resigns because I'm sure he's going to resign sometime soon. I'm pretty sure about that. What would you the first rule that you would change if you were the GM for a day, or the GM, the commissioner for a day?
Ooh, that is really good. I would change. Oh my God, that's really good. Oh, this is, I don't know.
I can give you,
Maybe.
I can say what some people say if you'd like.
Oh, I know. I got it. The NHL season will start October. First, or like season starts way earlier, okay. And the cup is awarded June 1 or
Thank
June
you.
like 15. Like, we're starting earlier and
Oh
also shorten the preseason even more. I would
my
say
God.
we can blend the young teams turn. Like, I think that we're just wasting too many games here. Like, I just think it's a lower. What someone explained to me too, though, is there is still revenue being made from the preseason game, so that's part of it.
That's
But let's just start earlier, is all I'm saying here. What did
I
other people say?
no, I just remember because of the Sens and Habs trying to beat each other up for two preseason games
Yeah.
and all the craziness and Ridly Gregg just being the absolute pest that he is, and the hits on Kachuk and Shabbat, but people just talking about like why, and obviously Drew Doughty got hurt. And stuff like that. But people are just like, how can we find ways to reduce it? And I think maybe just cutting like a game or two, or having like almost games where are set for like essentially like AHLers. Like
The
the
problem, though, is I said that, but someone said it's like, then how do you market that game for tickets? That's the problem. You need to have some regulars, because then who else would buy a ticket to go there to see a bunch of minor league guys? That's the problem.
I don't know what the solution is, and I do not feel confident that the NHL is going to reduce games for quality over quantity of coin. So I feel like we're kind
True
of
that.
in a
Splitting
conundrum.
hairs.
I'm surprised. I guess I'm surprised you didn't go with like offside review or goalie interference, something like that.
Yeah, I was going to.
No.
I think for me with goal interference, it's gotten better generally. Like, maybe I'm
Except that
wrong.
one
Maybe it.
against, was it the Tampa? Oh my God.
Yeah, oh my God. Oh my God. I've never been more shocked. Like, that one. So maybe goal interference would have been a good one to pick, but I think for me, it'd be great to have this wrapped up by like June,
Yep. All right.
because I love hockey. I love watching hockey, but it's not even so much that it's right into June. I like when June has hockey. I hate how long September is, man. Like,
Oh.
and August. Like, let's just move it forward a bit, and then if there's no hockey in for all of June, or like it's there's that break, I get some of June. Then we go into free agency. We get my fix back. Then we're off for a bit. I just it's better.
No,
It's way better.
I did not I did feel bad for my friend Kyle Bukauskas, who had the Stanley Cup to draft to free agency within
Gauntlet.
4 days. Like, I'm like, just like the Sphere
How do you
was
do
great to
that?
do it again, but oh my God, like it's
That's
just
a gauntlet.
gauntlet, and it makes no sense. And talking like hearing about teams trying to figure out how to do the
Yeah.
drafts, it just too
But
quick.
here's the point. It's like they took away the draft because of the travel nightmares. But if we made the season start earlier, then this problem's avoided.
Yeah, I think it's the everyone doesn't want to go up against the NFL. I feel like that's the biggest
It's a
thing.
good point.
That's why
But
is
let's
the
start
four,
October 1.
yeah, Four Nations the week after the Super Bowl? There is a reason for that.
This is a
Look at
good
the
point.
NBA All-Star game as well.
Right.
Yeah, so I understand it. I understand it. There is a bit of a Goliath with the NFL. But is there anything, Jacob, that you want to, before I let you go, just plug for kind of Sportsnet stuff coming up? Obviously, we're both kind of on a mini hiatus, but is there anything
Yeah.
you're kind of working on or anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I mean, just check me out on Twitter, JL Stoller. I said before, I'm not very active. I do
On
tweet. I'm just
Twitter.
not every
You're
day.
just funny. That's all. You have
Yeah,
a
exactly.
funny tweet once in a while. Yeah, I love
Yeah,
it.
exactly. I have the occasional humorous tweet, but all my articles are there. Also, sportsnet.ca. It's gonna be ramping up pretty soon here with the deadline coming up, and the gauntlet, the last 26 here are gonna be really important. And yeah. Oh, and Winnipeg Sports Talk. Winnipeg Sports Talk Sunday Live
You
with
guys
Connor
are
Babchuk and Liz Hood.
great job.
That's where we
That's
ball
my
out.
more. That's
So
my Sunday morning fix. So I
yes, love
really enjoy
that.
it. And you guys do great stuff. Shout out to Liz and Connor. But thanks
Yeah.
so much for coming on, Jacob. I really appreciate it. Let's do it again. Maybe when the Sens and Jets are in the final. Oh, I don't think that's happening. But if that ever happens, I need to have you on the show. But
Absolutely. Even if not, we'll find a way.
we'll find a way. But thanks again, Jacob, for doing this, and enjoy the ride.
Thanks, man. You too. Thanks for having me.